Hello and welcome to the September 16th, 2025 Annals of Internal Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Christine Lane, Annals Editor-in-Chief, and I'm here to tell you about the new articles you'll find if you go to annals.org. Exposure to medical radiation is avoided during pregnancy unless absolutely essential. However, the potential effects of exposure prior to conception has generally not been a focus of much research. The first study I'll highlight shifts this focus and reports the results of a population-based cohort study that evaluated the risk for spontaneous pregnancy loss and congenital anomalies in offspring of women exposed to computed tomography before conception. Researchers studied data from 5,142,339 recognized pregnancies and 3,451,968 live births in Ontario, Canada, between April 1992 and March 2023, among women aged 16 to 45 years. The primary exposure was the cumulative number of CT scans up to 4 weeks before estimated date of conception, and the secondary exposure was the number of CT scans limited to the abdomen, pelvis, lumbar spine, or sacral spine up to 4 weeks before the estimated date of conception. Outcomes were spontaneous pregnancy loss, miscarriage, ectopic pregnancy, or stillbirth among recognized pregnancies and congenital anomalies diagnosed within the first year of life among live births. Of the over 5 million women with recognized pregnancies, over 600,000 had a CT scan before conception. Of all recognized pregnancies, 10.4% ended in spontaneous pregnancy loss, including over 450,000 miscarriages, over 47,000 ectopic pregnancies, and almost 20,000 stillbirths. Among women without a prior CT, the rate of spontaneous pregnancy loss was 101 per 1,000 pregnancies, compared to 117 per 1,000 in those with one CT scan, 130 per 1,000 with two CT scans, and 142 per 1,000 with three or more CT scans. The absolute rates of pregnancy loss were slightly higher when limited to CT imaging of the abdomen, pelvis, and lower spine. Among those with the CT scan, the risk for spontaneous pregnancy loss gradually increased as the timing of the most recent CT scan became closer to the estimated conception date. The rate of congenital anomaly was 62 per 1,000 live births in women without a prior CT scan, 84 per 1,000 in those with one scan, 96 per 1,000 with two scans, and 105 per 1,000 with three or more scans. These findings suggest exposure to radiation from CT imaging before conception increases the risk of pregnancy loss and congenital anomalies. The results should inform clinical practice and guidelines on radiologic imaging in women of reproductive age. Next is a simulation study that estimated the impact of disruptions of the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program in 31 U.S. cities. The study found that both indefinite and temporary disruptions to Ryan White services could sharply increase HIV incidence with more severe effects in cities in Medicaid non-expansion states. The effectiveness and cost-effectiveness of two glucagon peptide 1 receptor agonists is a focus of much recent research and clinical discussion. The next article examines the cost-effectiveness of semaglutide and tirzepatide for patients with knee osteoarthritis and obesity compared with usual care, diet and exercise, and weight loss surgeries. The study found that both semaglutide and tirzepatide would be cost-effective compared with usual care, with tirzepatide offering a more favorable return on investment at current prices. However, a secondary analysis found that Roux-en-Y gastric bypass would offer the best return on investment for cost-effectiveness thresholds above $30,700 per quali, which may stem from the long-term weight maintenance seen after weight loss surgery compared to GLP-1 receptor agonists. These findings should inform discussions between clinicians and patients on the differences between these weight loss interventions, their potential benefits and harms, and currently available knee osteoarthritis care options. Next is a systematic review of currently available evidence of the benefits, accuracy, and harms of screening asymptomatic adults with blood-based multi-cancer detection tests. The United States Preventive Services Task Force recommends average risk screening for colorectal, cervical, and breast cancer, and also for lung cancer in persons with an appropriate smoking history. Unfortunately, many people do not receive the recommended screening for these cancers, and 70% of cancer deaths are due to malignancies for which there is no screening test. Blood-based multi-cancer detection tests have generated popular enthusiasm to fill the screening void. The test measures a variety of biologic signals released by abnormal or cancerous cells. The prospect of a simple, non-invasive test easily integrated into primary care is attractive. While the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has yet to approve any multi-cancer detection test, several can be obtained from the manufacturer with a doctor's order. Insurance will usually not cover the costs, which are currently at about $950. Researchers from the University of North Carolina Evidence-Based Practice Center and the Ohio State University College of Medicine identified and reviewed control studies of multi-cancer detection tests in asymptomatic populations, reporting cancer detection, mortality, quality of life, and harms. Harms included psychosocial distress, adverse events from unnecessary follow-up testing, and decrease in standard of care screening. The researchers did not identify any completed controlled studies of multi-cancer detection tests for screening. For test accuracy, the researchers included 20 unique studies reporting on 19 unique tests. They found that accuracy varied widely based on study design, type of cancer the test was designed to report, and subgroups of patients. One controlled study reported on one scream of harming outcome and two harms of diagnostic evaluation outcomes. However, the researchers deemed the strength of the evidence reported was insufficient due primarily to study limitations and unknown or inconsistent findings. The editorialist concludes, quote, despite consistent reductions in disease mortality, cancer remains the second leading cause of death in U.S. adults. The prevention potential for multi-cancer detection tests is exciting, but there are insufficient data demonstrating true clinical benefit and how to weigh the balance of that benefit to potential harms. Despite market pressures to move faster, we need such data to make the best decisions. Until we have them, it's hard to justify testing outside of a research setting. End quote. Increasingly, electronic health record data are being used to answer important clinical questions about predicting health outcomes with real-world data. However, these data often are missing important elements. A new Research and Reporting Methods article outlines approaches to handling this missingness when developing predictive models using electronic health record data. Another new article from the American College of Physicians Performance Measures Committee describes a process used by the American College of Physicians to identify core clinical areas that should be the focus of performance measurement. Some listeners might be aware that Annals of Internal Medicine has been a target of the U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary. A few weeks ago, we published an article that provided some of the strongest evidence available to refute the claim that the cumulative dose of aluminum received through childhood vaccination is associated with autoimmune, allergic, and neurocognitive conditions in children. Mr. Kennedy and his followers demanded retraction of the article. We did not retract it. If you're interested in learning why we found the criticisms of the study did not warrant retraction, go to the comments section that follows the article for responses from the authors and the editors to readers' comments. The topic of this month's In the Clinic review is chronic kidney disease. Go to annals.org to refresh your knowledge on this common condition. That brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening. I hope I've motivated you to go to annals.org to take a closer look at some of the new articles I've mentioned. Thanks to Beth Jenkinson, Andrew Langman, and Bernie Turner for their technical support.